preserve this, and we can do so in such a way there's no background interference type noise.
Sure.
I'll start this out with saying that there's a very interesting event happening of which brought me full front and center focus on the attorney Jonathan Emord, and it's the 2010 Health Freedom Expo being held at the Long Beach Convention Center in Long Beach, California. That's March 26th, 27th, 28th is the dates of the event itself. And for the expo information, go to healthfreedomexpo.com. That's healthfreedomexpo.com. And the phone number, if you want to, call them, is 888-658-3976. I'll give that once more, 888-658-3976. And as a matter of fact, Republic Magazine will be there in booth 512. Come by and see us. Pick up some complimentary copies of our magazine. I believe that, and we'll certainly find out more information, the exact times that the attorney is speaking at the event, and if he has a booth or whatnot, we'll get those details in just a little bit. I want to, welcome everybody to the Tuesday afternoon webinar with Republic Magazine. And as I said, my name is Earl Bell, and our guest today is attorney Jonathan Emord. And I want to go ahead and give you a little bit of information on him. He's one of the nation's leading free speech attorneys. He has defeated the Food and Drug Administration a remarkable 6 times in federal court, more times than any other attorney in American history. New York radio talk show host Bernard Owens calls Emord the FDA Dragon Slayer. The Cancer Control Society calls him the Freedom Man, who has helped win and preserve our great civil rights to life, to liberty, and to health freedoms. Emory, a university professor of law and economics, Jonah M. Shepherd, salutes Emord's tremendous experience in litigating against regulatory agencies and his unique insights on defending free speech rights. Congressman Ron Paul says, all freedom-loving Americans are in debt to Jonathan Emord for his courtroom victories and calls him a hero of the health freedom revolution. Formerly an attorney in the Reagan administration's Federal Communications Commission, Emord has practiced constitutional and administrative law in Washington, D.C. for the last 25 years. He is routinely consulted by industry, Congress, and the media on regulatory issues that affect liberty and property. He is the author of 4 critically acclaimed books, Freedom, Technology, and the First Amendment, 1991, The Ultimate Price, 2007, The Rise of Tyranny, 2008, and Global Censorship of Health Information, 2010. Wow, what a bio. And I'll tell you, just, reading that and knowing where you stand and what you do, what you have done and continue to do, I take my hat off to you and say you're a hero to the health freedom movement and really just the Constitution movement, the freedom of whatever you want to call it. But those things that you're doing, I'm standing up applauding here in my place. So appreciate that. And I want to welcome attorney Emord to the webinar. We're glad to have you.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Yes, and I just, I'm really pleased with what you're doing. And I wanted to ask you just right off the bat, maybe jump into some questions before we, later on, we'll take some questions from the folks that are listening. Does the FDA abide by the Constitution and laws of the United States? I have to laugh as I ask that.
Well, unfortunately, the answer to that one is no. We may look only at recent history to find so many abuses. The FDA, for example, has, as far as under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, it's only supposed to approve for sale drugs that have been established to be safe. and efficacious. The FDA, however, has repeatedly approved drugs over the objection of its own medical reviewers that are not safe and that pose a significant risk. Vioxx, most people are aware of, which caused 140,000 heart attacks and 60,000 deaths from heart attacks. The word of the risk of Vioxx causing heart attack and stroke was communicated by FDA's medical reviewers to the FDA commissioner who approved the drug for marketing over the objection of those medical reviewers. It is also the case that numerous other drugs have been approved over the objection of the medical reviewers. For example, Avandia is a diabetes drug that increases the risk of heart attack and stroke. It was considered too unsafe to be released, and nevertheless it was approved. Redux is another drug that was approved that is an appetite suppressant and actually increased the risk of several adverse effects to the heart valve, and that drug was approved nonetheless. There were 123 deaths implicated based on that drug. Rezolin is another drug approved by the FDA. It's a type 2 diabetes drug. That one caused liver and heart toxicity. That also was known to the FDA commissioner before it was approved, approved over the objection of the medical reviewers at the FDA. We can go on and on, but the basic point here is that FDA has a long history of being under the influence of drug companies to the extent of approving drugs that are demonstrably unsafe. And so in the area of violating the law, yes, the FDA routinely violates the law because it is beholden to the drug industry. It also censors nutrient disease information that is true. There are a series of court cases that we won against the FDA, and the FDA just ignores those cases. So it violates the law there. It violates the constitutional mandates of federal courts. In addition to that, Peter Barton Hutt recently wrote an article. Peter Barton Hutt is a former FDA chief counsel and a Harvard Law professor. He wrote an article for the FDA Insider publication in which he said that former Commissioner David Kessler intentionally had his staff not enforce provisions of the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act with which he took exception. So even though it was the law of the land, he's obliged to adhere to it and enforce it. He just decided he would not do it. This cavalier attitude is commonplace. The FDA is a independent regulatory commission. It is it creates an enormous amount of law. That law is not the product of Congress or our elected representatives. It is an archetypical bureaucratic oligarchy, and it really is a threat to constitutional governance of this country. So, yes, the FDA violates the law. Yes, the FDA violates the Constitution.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I, from time to time, I'll refer to the almost incestuous relationship between the FDA and the drug companies and just the whole medical cartel situation. And it's really interesting because I'm sure you've noticed this, but you'll see someone that maybe they work at the FDA, and then next thing you know, they go into the administration at some point. And they'll go back out to corporate America. And, you know, all these going back and forth between all these entities that supposedly you think have a lot of independence, and you have to wonder what kind of objectivity or whose interests do they really represent, or what side of the fence are they on. And you find out that these people don't seem to represent the people at all. They represent these large interests that are powerful, and there's mega money involved. I'm sure you've seen that.
Well, you know, in my book, The Rise of Tyranny, I explain in detail several instances of exactly what you're talking about. The FDA is a captive of the drug industry. The FDA Associate Director of the Office of Drug Safety, David Graham, testified before Congress that FDA is under the influence of those that managers within the FDA, the political managers, call the FDA's quote-unquote clients, that is, the drug companies that the FDA should be regulating under its mandate, it nevertheless considers clients, and the FDA is beholden to them. David Graham testified that the FDA considers it its mission to approve as many drugs as possible, and also considers it its mission to serve its clients, which it views as the drug industry, to the extent that it is willing and has been shown to approve drugs that are unsafe. Graham blew the whistle on FDA, and they were rather shocked to hear what he had to say. He was punished by the FDA for what he said, and there's quite a bit of evidence to show that the FDA attempted to silence him and silence many others. And in my book, The Rise of Tyranny, I explain that history. But it is not a secret. It's rather clear from the evidence, and the FDA has been called to task over and over again by its whistleblowers. Unfortunately, as I show in that book, the influence of the drug industry is not just limited to the Food and Drug Administration. It's considerable in the Congress of the United States, so much so that no true reform of the FDA has ever been passed. The drug industry has a stranglehold around the agency, and the Congress of the United States protects the drug industry rather than reform the laws in ways that would limit the ability of the drug industry to control the FDA.
It almost reminds me of something that would be like institutionalized syndicate or mafioso activity, the way the FDA and the drug companies operate and what goes on there. But anyway.
Well, you know, I don't mean to suggest that by what I'm about to say that anyone is in organized crime the people I'm about to talk about, but former FDA Commissioner Lester Crawford had to resign when it was revealed that he did not reveal on his government employment forms his ownership of large food and drug company stock. And he had several opportunities to reveal that information. There were interviews held with him by the FBI inviting him to reveal it, and he still did not. So ultimately, charges were brought against him. He resigned, and he pled his way out of a prison sentence and paid a significant fine. But immediately after he left the FDA, he then went to work for a lobbying group in Washington, and its principal, among its principal clients, is Merck, the company whose product Vioxx he protected against efforts to remove it from the market for all the way up until the company itself removed the product in the face of a significant product's liability risks. So you see, your revolving door point is well established, and that's just one good example. But many former FDA commissioners have either been employed on the board of directors of drug companies or have taken chairs at universities that are financed by the drug companies that they helped while they were at the FDA, or more directly work for those drug companies in lobbying positions or otherwise. So the revolving door exists. It is a terrible corrupting force, and the Congress of the United States leaves it in place, fully cognizant of the fact that it is a corrupting force, because many members are willing to defend the drug industry's interests over the interests of the American people.
That's really sad. Yeah, it's a total reversal of what people would think would be going on and should be going on and is going on, but it's not. What can be done to reform the FDA?
Well, it's important for people to make this an important issue for Congress by insisting at town hall debates and in their correspondence to congressmen that they answer specifically for what they are doing to reform the FDA, to eliminate the undue influence of drug companies over that agency, and to protect freedom of informed choice by ensuring that the FDA does not block access to truthful nutrient disease information. But in addition to that and voting out of office those rascals who have a track record of support for the drug industry against the interests of the American people, I would strongly recommend that people ask their members to support legislation that I wrote for Congressman Ron Paul that he's introduced that provides protection in various ways. The first bill is a Health Freedom Protection Act. The actual name of it has been changed. I'm going to find out what that is here in a second. But one bill that I wrote for Congressman Paul strips the FDA of any power whatsoever over nutrient disease claims, so that the FDA must leave it to the Justice Department and the FTC to police against deceptive advertising in the market, and must limit its role so that it no longer has a prior restraint on the communication of nutrient disease information. A lot of people out there may not realize, but the FDA prohibits absolutely any communication in the market of the association of a nutrient with a disease. So if you have scientific proof that a nutrient affects a disease, you are prohibited from communicating that, even if it's true. So it's an absolute prior restraint and gross violation of the First Amendment. The Health Freedom Act that I wrote for Ron Paul is H.R. 3395, and it's pending presently. And I would strongly urge your listeners to contact their congressman, ask them if they'll support that bill, and to state directly and truthfully to you whether they will. The other bill that I wrote for Congressman Paul is called the Freedom of Health Speech Act, which is H.R. 3394, and this one would strip the FTC of its power to force people to prove to a near certain degree that what they say about nutrients affecting health and disease is true before they are allowed to communicate it. In other words, under this FTC regime, the burden of proof is placed on the speaker to prove to near conclusive degree, to a near conclusive degree, which is impossible, virtually impossible in science, that something is true before you can say anything at all about it, because the FTC presumes when you make a statement that what you say implies claims that you may not even have communicated, and then deems all of it deceptive. So under the Fifth Amendment, the government is supposed to bear the burden of proof when it wishes to act against you, whether it's your speech or other rights. And here they shift the burden of proof to you. They say, essentially, either you prove to our satisfaction that you possessed evidence that established what you said to be true to a conclusive degree when you said it, or we will deem it false. Even if you have evidence after the fact that shows what you said is true, they won't hear it, and they deem what you say is false, condemn you, prosecute you, and so on. So this is a grossly burdensome regime upon speech that the Freedom of Health Speech Act ends at the FTC. And the last bill is the Congressional Responsibility and Accountability Act, and this is designed to restore constitutional government in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that over three-quarters of all laws in this country are not the product of their elected representatives, but are the product of the unelected bureaucracy. The unelected bureaucracy is really the governing power in the United States. We are really no longer a country run by a republic. We are a country run by a bureaucratic oligarchy, unanswerable to the courts and to the Congress and to the American people. So what this bill does is prevent any regulation promulgated by a bureaucratic entity from becoming enforceable in law unless the Congress of the United States passes that regulation into law in the way in which the Constitution designates. So it would restore the balance of power and the separation of powers that is indispensable to the maintenance of a republic, and would help end the bureaucratic oligarchy that is really ruining freedom in this country without any check or say so from any other agent, any other department, constitutional department in the government.
Okay. Well, you know, one thing that we obviously want to do is eliminate folks from office that are stomping on our rights, and then obviously electing people that will protect and defend our rights, our freedoms, our constitutional freedoms. And one of the dangers, I think, is sometimes you can even elect someone that really talks a pretty good line. They sounded good when they're campaigning and saying all the right stuff that we wanted to hear, and then they get up there and these lobbyists with all the money and the goodies and everything flowing like wine, and sometimes even maybe other favors offered, or maybe even threats of difficulties if certain things aren't done or certain things are done that they don't, that these powers don't want done. Isn't that a kind of a real challenge for us, how people can get corrupted and they're getting taken off their so-called purpose from where they stand? And not all of them will stand like Ron Paul, unfortunately. What do you say to that? How would you address that?
Well, the reason for the significance of this corruption and its overwhelming presence in Washington is the fault of big government. I mean, essentially, if the power to abuse the American people did not reside in the hands of these members of Congress and the president and the bureaucratic agencies, it would not happen. And the reason why that power exists is because all of the limits that the Constitution imposes on the assumption of power in single hands, of legislative, executive, and judicial power in single hands, in other words, of tyranny, all of the limits on tyranny that the framers of the Constitution prescribed have essentially been written out of the Constitution so that unlimited government, instead of what they call for, limited government, unlimited government is the order of the day. We know from world history that when ancient and present history, that when you allow the accumulation of this power, executive, judicial, and legislative, in single hands, like in the case of a bureaucrat in Washington, that bureaucratic agency head enforces the law, defines the law, that is, legislates it in regulations, and then oftentimes prosecutes parties for violating the law that the agency has created. Under our constitutional system, those functions are all separate. They're kept separate because the framers of the Constitution understood, as did Montesquieu, who they drew from, the French philosopher Montesquieu, who in the spirit of the laws defined the accumulation of these powers in single hands as tyranny. The framers of the Constitution sought to keep the powers separate and in specific departments and not to have them delegated away. The notion of delegation of power outside of Congress, of these governing powers, was forbidden in the early days of the American Republic. But since the 1930s, this matter of delegating all these powers to independent regulatory commissions has become commonplace, so that really today we are governed by dictators who are the heads of these agencies, who are unaccountable to the Congress and to the courts and to the American people. They're unelected. And that is the destruction of liberty. It should come as no surprise then that the framers, as they predicted would happen, they predicted that our country, if it fell prey to institutions that would have combined legislative, executive, and judicial powers, that they would serve their own interests at our expense and would use the power of government to take advantage of people so that it would benefit themselves. And that's what happens. That's why drugs are approved that are unsafe. Drugs that cause things like Vioxx did, my goodness, 70,000 heart attacks in the United States, 70,000 deaths from heart attack, 140,000 heart attacks. This is a level of destruction comparable to the entire Vietnam War visited upon us because a commissioner of the FDA defended the interests, economic interests of a drug company to allow that drug to remain in the market over the health interests of the American people. This is not an isolated instance. It tells us that tyranny has reached a very high stage in our government and that the only way to return our government to any regulable sense of justice comparable to what it was at the time of the founding of the Republic is to strip it of its powers, limit those powers to those that are constitutionally prescribed, and restore the responsibility for lawmaking to Congress, and then hold the members of Congress's feet to the fire, make them responsible for reestablishing a republic in this country that is representative of the interests of the American people and that does not cause the power that it possesses to be abusively used. We have become a victim of encroachment by government over 75 years, since the 1930s. And into areas that were previously always regulated privately. And as a result, while many of us have been induced to think that government can protect us and supply every human need, that is a real fabrication. We must depend upon our own merits in this life, but we really have to restrict the role of government in our lives if we are to enjoy freedom. We cannot have a significant government presence in our lives and freedom. The two are antithetical. They work against one another. There's nothing we can do other than to restrict government to ensure that we have a maximization of our own personal liberty.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering, so many of the things that you say are things that I myself and I know our listeners really resonate with. Definitely of such like mind in constitutional and freedom issues and that type of thing. I'm wondering, what do you think is the most important issue that we face today in our country?
I think the most important issue that we face is a loss of constitutional governance. I think the most important issue that our country faces is a constitutional crisis in which the Constitution, as designed by the framers of the United States, framers of our Constitution, was intended to prescribe limits on power, to have a separation of powers, a system of checks and balances, and was to ensure through the Bill of Rights that individual liberties were to be protected against the government. And what we have all across the board, all over the country, and as a result largely, almost exclusively, of the actions of independent regulatory commissions, is a loss of our rights to life and to liberty and property. We have a Food and Drug Administration that is countenancing the murder of American citizens by its approval of drugs that have that as a normal consequence. We have a Drug Enforcement Administration that is destroying the public's right of access to substances that contain ephedrine and pseudoephedrine for cough and cold remedies in order to prop up drug companies that make those products and destroy all the independent producers of those products that are in competition with them. Over 50 different companies have been destroyed by the DEA on bogus arguments that those companies, because they're not the pharmaceutical companies, but are instead independent producers that distribute through retail outlets, that those companies are somehow inherently at risk of diversion to the methamphetamine trade, when that is not the case. The evidence doesn't exist, and the risk of diversion is equal with the drug companies as it is for most of these large, reputable, independent competitors. But the deputy commissioner of the DEA is destroying all the independent competition, again, to protect the drug industry from competition. This goes on and on. I mean, we have laws that allow for the taking of property, that allow for the confiscation of property before someone is adjudicated guilty of a criminal offense. These laws were created as part of the war on drugs, which has gotten grossly out of hand, and now they're being expanded to apply to people who are engaged in other conduct that the government is labeling potentially criminal. And even before an adjudication, they can seize all your bank accounts, transfer the funds to Washington. They can prevent you from having access to any of your resources. All of this before an adjudication of guilt. This taking power is extraordinary and is commonly used now by the Justice Department in certain areas of litigation outside of the drug context. We have a Medicare system which is dumbing down the quality of care to the mediocre level for all American citizens who are in Medicare, and is so heavily regulating physicians and denying them the exercise of independent professional judgment that physicians are essentially becoming bureaucrats. I represent many of them in struggles with Medicare, where Medicare will second-guess their judgment without any sound basis and will demand that they reimburse Medicare enormous sums of money, plus penalties and interest penalties, allegedly because they billed Medicare for services that were not covered, even when there is a good explanation and sound reason for deeming them covered. They'll use other rather extraneous arguments to justify getting the money back, all because Congress wants to see the commissioner of the director of the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services recoup money from doctors They have expanded the definition of fraud to include matters that are not reasonably considered fraud. They have expanded the definition of underbilling and overbilling Medicare so that if you don't charge Medicare enough, you can be penalized and forced to pay money back if you're a physician. Or if you overcharge Medicare, you can be forced to reimburse Medicare not just for what they say is the overcharge, but for everything that you billed Medicare. The system is one that is predicated on deceit. You can't grow government without growing deceit and political machinations that manipulate otherwise honest transactions between people or among people. This is the logical consequence of it. So we suffer from a constitutional crisis in this country. It arises from too much government. We need to restore the system of checks and balances. We need to narrow the focus of the government back to the constitutional constraints that exist. To use Thomas Jefferson's language, we need to bind the country down, or bind the government down by the chains of the Constitution. It needs to be meaningful. It needs to control our government. We need to have a government of and by and for the people. But it has become a government of and by and for the bureaucrat. And that is not just the bureaucrat, but actually the head of the bureaucratic agencies. And that's the death of our great republic. And that's what we cannot allow as good American citizens. We cannot allow this destruction of our liberty to take place. We have to rise up against it. We need to vote out of office those who countenance it. And we need to insist on those who are in government to take the responsible measures necessary to be accountable for the actions of the government and to ensure that the laws of the government come not from the bureaucracy but from the Congress itself.
You know, I really hear you with that, and it seems to me that if we in this country had a government that was absolutely abiding by the Constitution and only involved in those areas that were specifically, explicitly enabled by the Constitution only and nothing more than that, then these systems, bureaucracies, whatever you want to call them, wouldn't be set up where the foxes indeed are enabled to guard the hen house. And we all know what happens there. So I hear you on that. That's incredibly it needed to be understood by everyone. What is the Dietary Supplement Safety Act, and what's wrong with it?
The Dietary Supplement Safety Act is a bill that Congressman McCain or Senator McCain introduced that is an utter disaster. Senator McCain, I think, has established that he is not the Reagan Republican or the friend of limited government, the enemy of bureaucracy and regulation that he campaigned for president as. He is instead really indistinguishable in many respects from his most liberal colleagues in the Senate, and this bill establishes that all too well. Under this bill, Congressman or Senator McCain would have everyone who distributes dietary supplements, including every multi-level marketer in the country, would have to register with the Food and Drug Administration and would have to list the products that they sell and all the ingredients in the products that they sell. They would be required to keep records of this information in their wherever they do business, which for many would be in their homes if they're multi-level marketing people, available to be accessible by FDA agents for inspection. And they would be subject to civil penalties that are significant if they violated either the reporting, the record keeping, or other details of the bill. It is an utter disaster. It's a phony bill because he says that it is for the purpose of enabling the government to go after companies that sell supplements as illegal steroids. But existing law fully allows the FDA to do that. There's no need for new law to do it. Instead, this new law really enables the government to take a large number of supplements off the market by giving the FDA commissioner unbridled discretion to declare any dietary supplement marketed in the United States before October 15, 1994, as unsafe and to refuse to post it on a dietary supplement list that this bill calls for her to create. She's given free discretion, no limits on it, to determine what should and should not be posted on this list in her assessment of all supplements sold before October 15, 1994, which is an enormous body of supplements in the country. And then she's given this great power to prosecute people who are law-abiding folks for simple record-keeping violations and for failing to report who they are to the government, registering annually and listing their products and every ingredient in those products. So this is a big government bill sponsored by somebody who campaigned for president as a limited government guy, and it proves the lie of that representation. He's not a limited government guy after all. And I've written several articles about this on newswithviews.com. But it is a disastrous bill, and everyone should oppose it and should write to their email their senators saying that they oppose this bill and want those senators to do the same.
Okay. Well, you know, with McCain, I was amazed how many people were fooled by him and thinking that he was really, pretty much a defender of liberty, and he's the opposite to me, just a total sellout, even pretending in some ways, in some areas, with some lip service to be a friend of liberty, and yet in every important instance, totally doing the opposite of that. And I'm glad that you articulated that quite well. What lawsuits do you have pending against the FDA currently?
Well, we have three lawsuits pending against the FDA on behalf of the Alliance for Natural Health and Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw and the Coalition to End FDA and FTC Censorship. And these suits, the first one sues the FDA for reversing its decision to allow an antioxidant vitamin cancer risk reduction claim. In the late 90s, in a landmark decision that we won against FDA called Pearson versus Shalala, FDA was held to have unconstitutionally censored a claim associating antioxidant vitamins with reduction in the risk of certain kinds of cancer. FDA abided by that begrudgingly. We had to sue FDA a second time, and the court held the FDA's failure to implement the first decision to be a violation of the First Amendment and enjoined FDA with an injunction from preventing the claim. Without any relief from the court, FDA last year unilaterally announced that it would not permit any further use of this antioxidant vitamin cancer risk reduction claim. So again, it's lawless activity, and we've sued the FDA on that. Likewise, in the second suit, the FDA, after approving a selenium cancer risk reduction claim, announced again unilaterally that it would not allow the claim to be made any longer. And we sued them on that. This is, again, in direct violation of prior court orders. In the third case, a lot of people don't realize this, but the FDA has imposed enormous new regulatory restraints on the supplement industry in what are called good manufacturing practice guidelines. These are not really guidelines. They're actually legal restrictions. And it's an over 1,000-page regulation that has mainly largely ambiguous compliance requirements. Despite the ambiguity in the compliance requirements that regulate everything from where bathrooms are to be located in a manufacturing plant to whether individuals, their educational backgrounds are sufficient for the positions that they hold, this regulation does not include sufficient definition of its restraints to permit those who are regulated by it to know what is required of them. So they're floundering, wondering whether or not what they've done is sufficient to satisfy the FDA, and not knowing because the FDA won't tell them. This is a trap for the unwary, purposefully left ambiguous, so the FDA can use this massive new regulatory regime to remove from the market any company it doesn't like. Well, because the consequence of violating these ambiguous rules is not just civil but criminal. That is, people can be thrown in jail for it as an act of criminal adulteration. And by the way, adulteration under these rules exists even if the product sold is safe. Record keeping is defined by operation of law. Record keeping violations are defined by operation of law as adulteration under this new set of regulations. Because you are thrown into jail as one of the consequences of violating these rules, the Fifth Amendment requires that the government avoid ambiguity, insists under the Constitution that if you are to hold someone to a threat of criminal sanction for violation, you must give that person sufficient clarity in regulation so that they can conform their conduct to the law and enter a safe harbor where they're not subject to prosecution. The FDA has not done that. It has purposefully created a trap for the unwary, and as a consequence, it violates the law. That's what that third suit is about. So those are the three suits we now have pending against FDA.
Okay. That's very good, very interesting. I would say at this point that I want to invite folks to join in on the conversation. And if you have a question for Attorney Mord and you'd like to be able to ask that question, if you've dialed in on the phone bridge line, dial star 2 on your phone keypad, and we'll know that you'd like your line unmuted, and we'll do so. If you're listening by Internet, then the link that you used right there on that same page, just under that link, you'll find a small question box. Type your question into that box. It'd be real helpful if you put a first name, city, and state, and then hit submit, and we'll make sure that question gets asked. And it's certainly a great way for you to participate and to let us know the things that are important to you, and that way we can make sure they're asked. I want to remind everybody that we are speaking with Attorney Jonathan Emord, and he is with Emord & Associates. He also is going to be a presenter at the 2010 Health Freedom Expo at the Long Beach Convention Center in Long Beach, California. That's being held March 26th, 27th, 28th. Just so you'll know, there's also one they're holding in Chicago in June. So if you want more information on that, go to healthfreedomexpo.com, healthfreedomexpo.com, or you can call 888-658-3976. That's 888-658-3976. And if you would, just so that we'll know when you're speaking there, do you have that in front of you, or could you share that? Unfortunately,
yes.
I don't have it right in front of me.
It's on Friday, the 26th of March at 2 p.m. in room 203A of the place where it's Long Beach Expo is being held, which I think is, let me see here if I can find the address for you. I think it's the Long Beach Convention Center.
Yes.
Not sure is that right?
That's where it's being held, and unfortunately I don't have that website open in front of me for the address, but I want to say it's on Ocean Avenue, but all of that will be also in the on the website. The full schedule, who's speaking when, and all of the information that you'll need for that, the address and a map and everything imaginable to be real clear on what's going on there. So that's your speaking engagement on Friday at 2:30 then?
That's right.
Okay. All right. And the other thing is it would be very helpful if folks had your your website address and your contact information and so forth.
Okay, the website for me is emord.com, emord.com, and my email address is jemord@emord.com.
Okay, and if folks are not so internet savvy, maybe they're listening by phone bridge line, is there a number to call to reach your office?
202-466-6937.
Okay, great. And I'm certainly looking forward to that event. That's going to be, I've gone for the last several years. It's a very brisk, busy event, a lot of people attending, a tremendous array of all kinds of speakers related to health freedom issues, and yours is no exception. It's going to be excellent. I can't wait for that. And the vendors there, every imaginable cause, product, support for your wellness, you'll find there a lot of innovative, cutting-edge things. So certainly go and take part in that and experience as many speakers as you feel led to and take part in that whole thing. One thing I wanted to know, I know your books, the latest global censorship of health information and the rise of tyranny are available on Amazon.com. And maybe if you want to just tell us a little bit about those two, and particularly your latest one, that'd be great. I think we'd like to have a little snapshot of it.
Well, I'd be happy to. The Global Censorship of Health Information book talks about the globalization, basically, of censorship by the government to protect drug companies from competition. I became aware of the extreme nature of this when the European Food Safety Authority began restricting dietary supplements several years ago, and this year is implementing those restrictions such that hundreds of products that were previously legally sold in Europe are now illegal, and claims are absolutely prohibited. Both what we call structure function claims here and health claims are prohibited in Europe unless this European Food Safety Authority finds them to be allowable. As a result, hundreds and hundreds of claims, well, actually thousands of them, petitions for claims to this European Food Safety Authority have been denied, creating a huge regime of censorship in Europe that is worse than the already horrible regime of censorship that exists here in the United States. And these similar regimes exist in every country I've found that regulates drugs. Not every country on earth regulates drugs, but everyone that does has in place a system of censorship against allowing any food or food ingredient to convey truthful information about the effects of those foods and food ingredients on disease, so as to preserve an absolute market monopoly for drugs over therapeutic information. And the governments in each of those countries, I explain here in this book how that works, in each of those countries sustains this censorship to protect the drug industry from competition. And it is an enormous regime of censorship, far greater than anything that has existed in the history of mankind. It's reminiscent of the system of censorship that existed in England during the courts of years the Court of Star Chamber existed in the 1600s and 1700s. And I explain the full history in the book of English censorship, of censorship in Europe and of censorship in the United States, and of the meaning of free speech principles that arose in the Enlightenment era in Europe, and how those came into full fruition in our country and through the Declaration of Independence and recognition of natural rights, became a part of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, and explain how then this right of free speech is violated in these instances all around the world and what must be done to stop them. I explain also legislative alternatives and litigation that can be used to bring about an end to these systems of censorship in each country of the world where they are maintained. So that's what that book is about, Global Censorship of Health Information. The Rise of Tyranny is an explanation of how, in our country, federal agencies abuse power and pose risks to our lives and our liberty by basically being unbridled in their discretion, how our constitutional system was designed to be one of limited government and of checks and balances, how that, from the 1930s forward, has been lost to a bureaucratic oligarchy. And I explain the corruption that has been spawned as a result of this change in power, and how unaccountable these people are, and how frequently the heads of these agencies feather their own nests for future economic lucrative post-government employment by favoring one industry or another in the regulatory process, and how the consequence is a trail of broken companies, destroyed industry, lost jobs, and abuse of power, and then also most significantly, in the case of the FDA, actual loss of human life, both injury and death as a result of favoring drugs that were known by FDA medical reviewers to be unsafe, but which drug companies were able to influence the FDA commissioner to get on the market over the medical reviewers' objections. So that's what that book is about, The Rise of Tyranny.
Okay. Well, it certainly seems that so very significant money and opportunity will make people's ethics, integrity go out the window sometimes, for some people. And it's unfortunate that those types of people will gravitate into those positions and do the things that are done. I know there was somebody, I can't remember who it was, but we spoke with someone in a webinar not too long ago, but they were talking about how commonplace it is for people who maybe don't make a whole lot with FDA compared to what they can make with a drug company to leave the FDA and then go work for a drug company and have a tremendous increase in income there and do extremely well. And you kind of look the trail of what they've done on both ends of the fence, and it's not the most positive things that they've done. I have definitely heard that. We have a couple of people that are they're holding that would like to ask questions. If you like, we'll go ahead and move right on into that.
Sure, sounds great.
Okay. We've got it says Saluda, Virginia. I'm having a little technical glitch here. Hold on a second. Okay, now I've got your line in muted. Ends in 8307, the phone number does. Are you there, guest? Saluda, Virginia, are you there, guest, to ask a question? Your phone line, the number ends in 8307. If you'll speak up, guest, we'll hear you.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
You can hear
go
me
right
now.
Ahead.
Okay. Sorry. I have a little confusion with the mute button here. I'm actually in Topping, Virginia, and I had a question. I got in a little bit late, but you were saying that we had really kind of lost our sovereignty and our Constitution. Is this why we are having trouble getting certain things taken care of in the courts? There have been some lawsuits concerning eligibility and so forth. Is that why this is happening? Because there were laws on the books that allowed we the people to convene a grand jury and then bring something to court. Is that why we can't do it?
Well, definitely the courts have been complicit in the rise of big government and the loss of individual liberty. We can look at the typical bureaucratic case now coming into federal court and see just how sorry the condition is for the protection of individual rights. I can just give you one example. Let's say you are a Medicare beneficiary and you have been denied coverage for something that you have a reason to believe should be covered by Medicare. So this is a federal benefit. And then I can give you another circumstance where it's your own rights involved. But let's start with a federal benefit context. This is even, you know, this is something the government says you are entitled to. And the Medicare system, through its regulations, determines that you, for whatever reason, should not have received coverage for that service and that you should have to pay for it directly yourself. And that imposition of a determination occurs even if you in good faith believe that the thing was covered, even if your doctor told you it was covered, believed it to be. Later it's second-guessed by Medicare and said, no, we're not going to pay it. You end up going to try to appeal this. Well, you have to appeal it through the Medicare system. You first go to the carrier. The carrier rejects your claim. that you then appeal to another carrier. That carrier will probably reject your claim. Then you go to a Social Security Administration administrative law judge who will act not only as a judge but oftentimes as a prosecutor, interviewing you, questioning you at the same time that you're trying to present evidence. They'll make a determination against you. That then is appealed to the Medicare Appeals Board. After that, if you still want to fight the case after you've exhausted all of your resources and have no money left, but let's say you do, you then appeal from there and finally, for the first time, may get to a court. It may take 4 or 5 years to get there. This is the kind of thing, the bureaucratic apparatus that Congress has created and that the courts have condoned, that deny people rights and destroy them in a bureaucratic system that has no respect for their dignity or their health or their rights. On the other side, if you take property rights, for example, let's say you're a rancher and you live in the West. Let's say that you use RS-2477 rights of way. These are historic rights of way over government property to move cattle. Let's say that your cattle, because cattle are not very good about following street signs, happen to meander off the path into public land.
Mm-hmm.
United States Forest Service then may charge you fines. They may total thousands of dollars for trespass onto federal land. You may protest this. You may ask for proof of it. You may go through the whole bureaucratic process about this again to an administrative law judge, but you won't reach a court for years. And when you do reach a court, the court, as in the case of Medicare, as in the case here, and as in every other bureaucratic case, the courts now defer broadly to the judgment of the administrative agencies against you. So that if there's a rational explanation for the regulation, you will more likely than not be found, the issue will be found against you and in favor of the agency. So when bureaucracies act, when the federal bureaucracy, which now creates over more than three quarters of all the federal laws, we're no longer regulated, we're no longer the subjects of a republic, we're regulated by bureaucratic oligarchy. When they act, you have almost no defense because the courts will defer to those agencies in 99% of the cases against you.
I think probably my biggest question, you say that we're regulated to the point that the courts are going to be doing deferring in this kind of a case. Does this mean that, you know, for instance, right now there's like a gun rights bill in the Supreme Court. Does this mean the Constitution doesn't count anymore?
It means, as Judge Ginsburg, who's on the United States Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, a brilliant judge, he referred to parts of the Constitution that impose limits on federal power, which are now ignored and not given their original interpretation, that these doctrines form what is known, what he calls a constitution in exile, so that the Constitution is interpreted in a way to protect the growth of government. And while this is not always the case, for example, in the gun rights cases, it may be that the Supreme Court will recognize the meaning of the Second Amendment and will protect the rights of people to bear arms. But in many, many other instances, the Constitution has been read out of existence, so that limitations on the separation of powers and on rights under the Bill of Rights against government actors like the bureaucracy have been negated, all in a rush to protect the growth of government against individual rights, creating collective rights of people, as is expressed by bureaucratic legislation said to be in the public interest, against individual rights. And this happens quite frequently. We see this on the state level, even in the case of mandatory vaccination. Your right to dissent against having a substance that is alien to you injected into your body can be trumped by the interest of the collective, the government, in forcing you to receive that on the alleged basis that this is necessary to protect everyone in the community against the spread of disease, when in point of fact, there are obvious, less restrictive alternatives. If I might just quote from Judge Ginsburg briefly, on what he says about our constitutional in exile. He says, so for 60 years, the non-delegation doctrine has existed only as a part of the Constitution in exile, along with the doctrines of enumerated powers, unconstitutional conditions, and substantive due process, and their textual cousins, the necessary and proper contracts, takings, and commerce clauses. The memory of these ancient exiles, banished for standing in opposition to unlimited government, is kept alive by a few scholars who labor on in the hope of a restoration, a second coming of the Constitution of Liberty, even if perhaps not in their own lifetimes. I think that very well sums up my own sentiments about what has happened to our Constitution. We are no longer a constitutional republic. We have become a bureaucratic oligarchy.
That's scary. The state of Virginia has just passed, I believe they finished passing the Health Care Freedom Act here. Does that mean it's just sort of a non sequitur or what?
No, any effort to protect individual liberties, I salute. I just think that we need to do a lot more. In the end, what we have to do is restore constitutional government on the federal level and on the state level, but the need is urgent on the federal level, so that we stop the government from taking over every private aspect and commercial aspect of our lives. We didn't learn any lesson, apparently, from the fall of communism in the former Soviet Union and the transformation of China from a communist market into a free market. We didn't learn from their experience that communism is an utter failure, and instead we have many people in the Congress of the United States and even the President of the United States who favor government control over all aspects of the private sector, and controls that are debilitating, that create barriers to entry, that prevent people from starting new businesses and competing, that impose taxes on us that are hidden because they aren't overt forms of taxation. They tax us because it costs so much to satisfy these regulations. Just the FDA, which we were talking about, the GMP regulations, we had the former economist for Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors, Steve Hanke, and professor of economics, Paul Rubin at Emory, assessed the economic impact of these proposed regulations, and they determined that roughly one-third of that whole industry would disappear because it could not afford the cost of complying with over 1,000 pages of new regulation that FDA created. All, by the way, unnecessary, because you can declare the sale of an adulterated product that would cause harm to consumers illegal, and you can impose strict and severe penalties for it. But you don't have to regulate the processes by which every single dietary supplement is made. Yet FDA chose that process regulation, and really it did so because key industry figures realized that it would impose such significant costs on companies that it would drive a lot of their competitors out of existence. And that is, by the way, the common game played in Washington. Game in Washington, the legislation game, which is also an article I wrote in newswithviews.com, the common game played in Washington is to have a lobbyist for your industry or your company, go to Capitol Hill, argue that something needs to be changed to protect the public from harm, when your real motivation is to create new barriers to entry that will cause your competitors to experience increases in cost and drive them out of business by use of legislation that you can afford but your competitors cannot. This is done all the time at the FCC and at the Consumer Product Safety Commission and in the Department of the Interior with the EPA. And this is a common game, and this game has been going on for some 70 years. It's just now reached the point where it is so gross, happening with such frequency, because the government regulates everything. So you have all these companies that pay millions and millions of dollars to have lobbyists on Capitol Hill to do this very thing. You have the drug industry, for example, to prop up, maintain their monopolies, and destroy their potential sources of competition from foods and dietary supplements. They have an army of lobbyists so big that there are approximately three drug lobbyists for every member of Congress. They spend $1 billion every decade on lobbying expenses. There's something sick about this. This is a system that is so corrupt that, you know, if you pay the piper, you can call the tune. And it's government that we're dealing with. It's an entity that's supposed to not be beholden to these interests, but is supposed to live under limits and to protect the rights of the American people. Its foremost role, I mean, the Declaration of Independence tells us that governments are instituted among men to protect the rights of the governed, and that when governments become destructive of those rights, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish them. Well, we better get to work at altering them.
We want to go ahead and abolish what these people are doing to us, because I'm running the Tea Party, but I'm running as fast as I can.
Well, good for you.
If you have any suggestions that we can do this better, I'd be happy to hear them.
Well, I'd be happy to hear what you're doing and to let you know. I appreciate very much anyone who is willing to take on this struggle, because if we don't do it, we have only ourselves to blame for the loss of liberties that we're experiencing.
Okay, I'll try to email you if I can figure this address out, and I've got a couple of things going on I'd like to run by you.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate that. That's okay, and then we're going to go to one other one. Let me just done this thing wants to react a little more slowly than I'd like it to. It's anonymous, so I'm not sure who you are, but if you speak up, yes, I'm sure we'll know.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sure.
Okay, great. Okay. My question, you're less than 50 miles from me. I'm in Maryland, but that's irrelevant. My question to you is, this need for prescription drugs, fortunately or unfortunately, begins with a doctor. That is that you can't, have a prescription, get a drug available by prescription only without seeing a doctor first or someone else who's authorized to write it. Is there a way we have of knowing a website that rates physicians? When I see a physician that is advertised as board certified, that means nothing to me. And I'm not too interested in going to somebody that's just going to shove medicine down my throat and tell me to have a nice day. So can you recommend such a website that's got an honest-to-goodness a critique of doctors that, instead of just blindly looking in the phone book and making a decision based upon the ad, where we could truly find out the practice that doctors have and use some kind of guideline or judgment to determine, who we would, prefer to see? Because, I'll be quiet. You go ahead and answer that.
Well, I really do wish that there was a site that would provide an answer for all of these questions that concern what doctor is best for you. The basic problem is that the practice of medicine, primitive as it is by comparison with something that could cure all disease, we're still in a primitive stage of development of medicine, believe it or not. It is enormously complex, despite the fact that it so frequently fails to address problems. And that's why integrative medicine is so popular in this country, because conventional medicine has so abysmally failed people, and hospitals have as well. It's not to say that they haven't saved lives. They have. But oftentimes, we have great tragedies as a result of simple failures of people to either pay attention to symptomology or to use the most effective treatment when that treatment may not involve an FDA-approved drug. We also have the problem that most practitioners will just simply follow FDA's lead. If FDA approves a drug like Vioxx, they'll prescribe it. Even though they start seeing problems, they assume that FDA approved it and it must be safe, and that these problems must be related to something else. And that's how you get 70,000 people to die from Vioxx and 140,000 heart attacks from Vioxx, with doctors not really recognizing that. And then some astute ones suspected there was a problem. So what do you do? When you have a medical problem, you need to research as much as possible the kinds of treatment available. I would suggest that one good place to go is the Center for Integrative Medicine at the University, I think it's Arizona State University, the University of Arizona. I'm sorry, I can't remember which one. The director is Randy Horwitz. This is a whole center that has combined conventional and integrative medicine in an effort to find at the university the best solutions to these to difficult medical problems.
Is he related to Leonard Horwitz?
I have no idea.
Okay, just asking.
But he may be, may not, I don't know. But he's an excellent doctor, but the center is quite good. I also have a personal bias in favor of Dr. Julian Whitaker and his Whitaker Wellness Institute in California. I think that's a great place that does enormous good with integrative medicine. I think for cancer, Dr. Charles B. Simone in New Jersey is one of the greatest in the world. He is an integrative medicine cancer doctor. My own mother, I have him seeing, and she was diagnosed at age 55 with chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and she was told she had 5 years to live. She's now 84 years old.
Well, it'd be nice if my mom had seen him.
Yeah.
She had the exact same diagnosis.
Oh, boy. I'm sorry.
Well,
I lucked out. I mean, I lucked out, and I did this. You know, he's a medical advisor to my law firm, and the conventional, she had a whole bunch of people in her treatment group. Everybody who followed the traditional care method died within the predicted 5 years.
My goodness.
My mother followed Dr. Simone's protocol for treatment of the cancer and stayed in touch with him and used diet modification, supplementation, and very gingerly applying specific, much milder chemo agents. And she's lived way beyond the 5 years. I mean, she was diagnosed at 55, and she's now 84.
And you know, one of the ways they use to treat that cancer, I kid you not, but this is, you know, no surprise to you probably, is they actually will drill a hole in your head, and they'll put the chemo, you know, directly into, you know, your whatever opening you have established, you know, inside your skull or inside your brain. That's unfortunately one of the methods that's available, and they leave people up to decide whether do you want a hole in your head or do you want to die. Give me the names of those places again.
One is the Center for Integrative Medicine, and I think that's at the University of Arizona, or it's at Arizona State University. I forget which one. The other one is the Whitaker Wellness Institute in Newport Beach, California. And the third recommendation I had was Dr. Charles B. Simone, and he is in New Jersey, Lawrenceville, New Jersey.
And what is his specialty?
He's an oncologist and immunologist.
Okay.
And, you know, these guys are all conventionally trained, but decided that integrative approaches were the best way to keep their patients alive. So,
you said Whitaker. What did you say, Whitaker?
Whitaker Wellness Institute.
Okay. And the first one was the Center for
Center for Integrative Medicine.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to mention with all of this talk that you've been doing about how courts have allowed bureaucracies and government agencies to take over, John Kottmeier, Kottmeier, of the Save a Patriot Fellowship, has written a book on that exact subject. And he has a federal court injunction against him, so he is not able to talk about things or distribute, you know, certain material anymore. But that doesn't keep anybody else from distributing it. He is just not allowed to. And you can the exact title of the book, just for clarification, is on his website. You can't get it off his website, but the title is still there. It's called his website is www.save-a-patriot.org. And then the name of the book is something like, Do Courts Have Lawmaking Powers? And if you do a Google search, the book will come up in entirety, not only from the Google website, but from a site called Laptop America. So, you know, it's a 40-some page book, and it'll completely, you know, go into legitimate government agencies that exist, which are very few, and then it will go into how the courts have allowed the government, you know, not only have allowed, but have been complicit in the government getting completely out of control. So, finished.
Well, thank you for that. The university I was looking for is the University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine.
Okay, sounds good.
Great. Appreciate that, listener. Okay, and, you know, it seems like it'd be great, kind of like that you were alluding to there, if we had a high-integrity, honest, real assessment thing, kind of like a Consumer Reports or whatever, that that would actually you know, rate and give you honest information on who's going to provide what and what way. And that would be a gold mine. That would be a wonderful thing for people everywhere to be able to check in and get a rating and find out where to turn. But you gave some great resources there, so that's really wonderful. And I'm looking at your website, imord.com, and you've certainly got a lot of good information there that people can take advantage of. And, of course, the Health Freedom Act that you referred to, the 3395 is there, the H.R. 3396 and 3394, all of those. And you've got, in fact, I see that you've been on PBS, and it gives some PBS appearances and some other video, radio appearances, publications, et cetera. Got a lot of good information there. Invite people to take advantage of that. And, you know, it certainly is something that will help a lot of people in need to understand how to deal with all kinds of different issues. I think anyone who had an issue, they would certainly want to make contact with your firm, you know, in these particular areas. I know that I certainly would. what I would say at this point is you've been extremely clear with the information that you've given, and I think that, you know, as far as for people to get more in-depth information, certainly to check out your website, check out your books, and also to come meet you at the 2010 Health Freedom Expo in Long Beach coming up. As I said before, that information is available at healthfreedomexpo.com. We certainly invite everyone to come by our booth there too, booth 512, and visit with us. Attorney, do you also have a booth there, or you're just presenting this particular?
Yes, event? We have a booth there. Again, we're selling the publications through the booth and also at the event. I'll be signing book copies there. But I very much appreciate and welcome people coming, because I think the information that we share is critical for people to appreciate the full extent of the rights violations taking place as a result of our loss of basic human liberties and the growth of government. It's a sad reality that, you know, when I grew up as a kid, my father was in the military and I lived in overseas, and I just was so very proud of this great country, and I still am, but I'm so disappointed with what has happened to our freedoms as a result of the abuses of people in power. For too long, people who have been in positions of governance have used their power to feather their own nests at the expense of the American people. And it's reached such an enormously horrible point today that we are really at the last stages of defense of constitutional liberty. We have to restore rights. We have to limit government if we are going to regain that greatness that was so characteristic of this country in its first 100 years. We have the attention of the world. The whole world looked. We began the ball rolling with Thomas Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence. It continues to have resonance around the world. All freedom-loving people around the world look to our early experience in the creation of a republic that had limited government, that protected the rights of the people. And we are no longer that country. And we, our people are. We all love liberty in this country. But our government has betrayed the promise of the founding generation. And it's our duty to restore that promise so that future generations can appreciate and live in a country of liberty. And that's something that we owe to those future generations. No matter how difficult it is to restore, we must do it. And we can't, if we love this country, allow those who would destroy it to succeed.
Well said. I want to, you know, remind everyone that we've been speaking with Attorney Jonathan Mord, and if we're going to be closing the webinar in just a little bit, but if someone's just dying to get a question in, this is like last call. If you've got a quick question and you're on the phone bridge line, dial star 2 on your phone keypad, and we'll be able to unmute your line so that you can ask the question. If you're listening via the internet, there's a question box there. Just type your question into that small question box underneath the link and submit it, and we'll make sure that gets handled. And I want to remind everyone that the replay of this particular webinar, along with our past webinars, and there are quite a few of them, I think there's three long pages worth at this point and getting ready to move into a fourth page, on every conceivable topic related to you know, the issues like we've been discussing today, and they're available there. I invite you to share these with your friends, send them out to your email list, get the word out about what's going on, because that's the way we're going to change this whole thing. The grassroots effort, certainly we don't have the media in our favor, just some of the alternative media, and they don't have quite the clout that the major media does. But if we share links to information, be they webinars or written material or whatever we can, every little bit of effort adds up to a major effort. And so let's, you know, certainly get it out. You can download these to your desktop and, as I said, share them out. We just so that you'll know, tomorrow we're going to have a very special webinar with our very own publisher, George Shepherd, and then Payman Montadu, who is he is the promoter of a conference that is happening starting this weekend, starting on Friday, and he has they both have something very special to share with you. It's something that kind of a secret they have held until now, and this will be of great value to the Patriot Freedom community. So they'll be unwrapping that gift tomorrow for you on the webinar at the same time. And then on Friday, we have Scott Tipps, who is the president of the he's going to be revealing the stunning effects of the new health care reform, and he's the president of the National Health Federation. How could I not remember that? he'll be with us on Thursday at the same time. So join us for those. And let me just check real quick. We do have Anonymous has another question, I do believe. Are you there? Did you have another question?
Okay, I just wanted to tell the doctor, and I'm not the doctor, the attorney, that there is actually, I saw it mentioned in the Washington Post probably a year ago now, but there is some kind of doctor rating service available in the Washington, D.C. area. I don't know how far, you know, that extends, and I don't know how good it is, but it's not non-existent, so I just wanted to make you aware of that. And to the moderator, the last time I checked on the Republic magazine, there was no Friday webinar listed. In other words, it didn't mention that was the day of the week that you had one.
Oh, I'm sorry. If I said Friday earlier, I didn't mean to. I meant Thursday. We have one tomorrow and one Thursday.
Okay.
We have had in the past a few that went a full week when we were covering quite a bit of material very rapidly. But normally they're Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Okay, very good.
We tend to miss. Okay, thank you. All right, and with that, what I would say that what we may want to do at this point, you know, other than folks coming and meeting you there at the event, and certainly there's so much available there that I hope people will, that are within range and can make it to that, to take part in that. But and if you would, this would be an appropriate time, Attorney Amore, to share anything that you had meant to cover and have thought of now, or any final thoughts with us. And maybe just before you do that, give us your contact information again.
All right. My website is emord.com. My email address is jemord@emord.com. My books are available through amazon.com. And I think you've mentioned the Health Freedom Expo is on March the 26th, 27th, 28th. I'll be speaking on the 26th at 2:30 in room 203 at the Long Beach Convention Center. I want to tell you just how grateful I am that so many people have been active in this health freedom movement, and also in the movement to support the Campaign for Liberty and for supporting the efforts of Ron Paul and others who have tried so diligently to bring about a restoration of the Constitution of Liberty that was meant to govern this country. I think there's no greater patriotic duty for people than to do that very thing. And it seems to me that we are at a point, a tipping point in this country, where more and more people are recognizing, even ones who previously thought that government could supply all the answers, they're coming to the realization that government is hopelessly corrupt. We have to limit government to specific functions, justice, state, treasury, and defense. And to quote Thomas Jefferson from his first inaugural address, a wise and frugal government shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. I pray that we will be able to restore good government to this country, and I've dedicated my life and my work to that end. And thank you very much for the chance to talk to you today.
Well, thank you very much, and I thank everyone that has joined us. I invite you to join us again tomorrow and also on Thursday for the events that we have for each of those days. And, you know, let's all keep on doing everything that we can possibly do, and let's make a difference in the world. That's what's changing it now, and the more we accelerate that, the quicker that we'll see the fruition of everything that we stand for. So with that, this officially ends our webinar. Everyone have a wonderful rest of the day. Goodbye.
The moderator has left the conference.